It is Tuesday morning, April the 28th. Joining us for a remote talk shop is Brian and Merritt from the city of Fortuna.
Well, by way of McKinleyville, right, Merritt?
Yeah, outside of Arcata, not McKinleyville.
Yeah, okay. Oh, yeah. Wouldn't want to get too crazy here. I thought, yeah, maybe it would be like kind of James Bond in the secret hideaway, huh?
Yeah, we'll just call it Humboldt County.
There we go. In rural Humboldt County. Winston, yeah, why do we say that? Teed up for us.
Pidgin English. Where did Pidgin English get that name from?
I would think because the birds, the pigeon birds, kind of chip or chirp a little bit, that there's some connection to the bird.
No.
Yeah, I'll say to the bird, but maybe it's the cadence of how a bird sings and maybe people talk and use the language. There's a similarity.
It's got nothing to do with the bird. The pidgin of Pidgin English is Pidgin English for business. It was derived in this manner. Bidgeness, bidgin, pidgin, pidgin, and finally, pidgin.
Okay.
All right.
Next. Jeez. Well, Mayor, what's been the reaction to some of the activity and some of the actions that the city has taken during the last 3 or 4 weeks during the shutdown or shelter in place?
You know, as a city, we have to have the essential services going. So, you know, we have to keep water flowing. We have to keep sewer going to the treatment plant. So not a lot of big changes there. And, you know, pretty standard stuff for those crews. You know, for our road crews, you know, there'll be a tree down. They'll be doing the regular maintenance. Our park crews are doing their mowing. So, you know, pretty much business as usual for a lot of our maintenance staff. City Hall is closed down. We're doing appointments for planning and building. So you can do a phone call, an appointment. We're still doing building inspections. So planning and building is going. The only difference is you can't just walk in and have an over-the-counter interview without an appointment. Finance, things have changed a little bit. We're restricting the payment, so you can't come in and pay over-the-counter, but you have to either call in and make a payment over the phone with a credit card or do a Dropbox in front of City Hall or do the online portal. So We're keeping things going. One of the more interesting things is doing the public meetings via Zoom. I'm sure everybody's seen the online platforms for meetings, and that's a bit interesting to, you know, have the Hollywood Squares set up for a council meeting, you know, on a computer monitor. But, you know, it's nice to be able to conduct business and that they've relaxed some of the Brown Act requirements. But, you know, we do enjoy having the public get into our meetings and be able to comment and have it more accessible. And so, you know, as soon as we can, it would be nice to get back into a more regular format for the council meetings. But I think we're doing a pretty good job of keeping services going. One of the other things we did is we do have of course, having a lot of the businesses shut down or all of those that are non-essential is a huge hit to the city. The city survives on sales tax, and cities like Fortuna even more so than others. And so it's going to be a big hit to the city financially, big hit to the business owner. So one of the things we tried to do to set up to help, we kind of followed Arcata's lead with doing a business resiliency emergency loan program, hoping that, you know, over a 6-month period, things will get better. We put together a loan program using some of the business loan funds that the city has set aside for business purposes and loans to encourage business. So we have, we're working with REDEC, Redwood Region Economic Development Commission, and they're underwriting and servicing loans. And so if somebody could get a loan of $25,000 and have no payments for 6 months, and hopefully that'll help cover their fixed costs or employees' costs if they're not able to immediately get into one of the federal programs that are out there. So, you know, we just started doing that last week, and we're starting to see those loans go out. And so that's one positive step. You know, of course, people don't want to borrow money, but if it can keep you afloat until things turn around, then really that's our goal with that program, is to keep the businesses going. And if people need that little gap funding with no payments for a while, that's what that was set up for, something that could be done fairly quickly.
Are there any restrictions on those funds?
Well, there's an application. We have it on our city website, but they can cover a lot of things. But really, we just want to make sure it's a you know, a business that's within the city, you know, and that it's a legitimate business and that, you know, they're going to be using the funds to pay for their cost to keep that business going. But there's not a lot of restrictions, and you can find some more details on our website.
I slowed you up. You were on a roll there. You're going on to another area.
Yeah,
also,
well, you know,
the city is doing.
Yeah, you know, the other thing too is we don't have our police facilities closed. I mean, of course, if there's an emergency, there's a button. So if there's an emergency, people could ring that. But we're, you know, of course, the law enforcement has changed a little bit. You know, more citing and releasing because they're not accepting as many people into the jail. So, you know, there's been some changes with our police and, of course, the protection that they're having to put into place to protect themselves from the risk of infection. But, you know, I think we're doing what we need to, following the public health order from the county and the state. We don't have a lot of choices in that matter at this point. You know, we're subdivisions of the county and the state, so we really have to follow those orders. We don't have a health authority at the city level, so we're responsible to follow those orders, and so we'll continue to do so. But I know that people are really anxious to see things happening, see businesses reopening, and that's our hope too. You know, as long as it can be done in a safe manner, let's see things start to get better. I think people are very anxious for things to get back to normalcy, or at least as much as possible.
Yeah, whatever normal is defined as anymore. KINF.
Yeah.
News and Information Time. It's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music. ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and the Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio. Easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Merritt Perry. Merritt, early part of last week, that the city had purchased a couple pieces of property and has earmarked it for a police station. I know, maybe 10 years ago, the old Fortuna Motors was purchased for that purpose, and things didn't really work out as anticipated at that site. Tell us a little bit about what that's all about.
Yeah, so, you know, we've been operating within our existing police station for some time. I think the original building was built in the late 60s, and there was an update in the early or mid-80s. But essentially, our police are operating mostly out of the top floor. There's a basement with some other functions down there, but not offices or anything, evidence, storage, things like that. But they're operating out of a 3,000-square-foot building, and, you know, our police force, the number of our officers, sworn and non-sworn, has grown, and so they're operating in very little space, and it really creates some functional obsolescence. You have desks and people real close to the front counter. You have a very small and uncomfortable dispatch without good access to break facilities and restroom facilities, and so they've been really working in an area that's really too small for what the department needs. And so a number of years ago, I want to say it was around 2008 or 2010, the city purchased the property at 280 12th Street. A lot of people are probably familiar with it. It's an old Ford dealership. Anyway, it was a large metal building, and that the city had hoped to turn into a police facility. Well, when the city ended up studying it, the city sold revenue bonds, and they had $2 million for that project. They bought the property for $1.2 million, and they were not able to. Ultimately, they ended up hiring an architect, and what it turned out to be is it was more expensive to retrofit a metal building that didn't meet seismic standards. So basically, you'd have to tear it down and put a new one in there. And if you're going to put a new facility, you want to plan for some time. So really, it ended up being a project that would have cost $8 to $10 million at least. So more than what the city has available in its budget or would have, and very difficult to pay the debt service on a $10 million loan for a small city like Fortuna. So we had to make a tough decision. The council said, look, this just isn't going to be economically feasible for the city. It's too much money. We ended up looking at some other parcels for other reasons. We were looking at the former Eureka Physical Therapy building on the corner of Newburgh Road and Ronerville Road. And considering it as a pool, the Roner Recreation District was looking for a pool, but it has a really small therapy pool. But what occurred to us as we were out on the site is, hey, this building could make a really nice spot for a police station. It's about at the central area of the city. It has good access to many parts of the city. It's a wood frame structure that could be easily modified to a police facility, unlike the previous building where you have a metal shell that really doesn't meet current standards. That would have to be a tear down and start over. So, you know, it seemed like it might be a good opportunity to find a building, and the footprint of that building is about 5,700 square feet, so almost twice of what the police department's operating in now. So we made an offer on the property, very good property owners to work with, and we did an architectural feasibility study that said, hey, could we build a building here? Would it make sense to buy this property? How big would a building be? So the parcel that the existing building on and the adjacent vacant lot, we completed a feasibility study and showed basically that, you know, we could build a police facility here that would be about 15,000 square feet. That would be what the police department would need in the future. Problem is, that's going to be at least a $5 million price tag. So that's, again, something the city can't afford. You know, we cut the cost in half looking at this other site and making some different assumptions about what the needs are. But our hope now is that we can remodel the existing building and get, you know, that's about 6,000 square feet, which would almost double the size that we have right now, and use that at a much lower cost. So we made an offer. We expect to close on those parcels next week, and then we're hoping that we can remodel and use that space very quickly and have a new location for a police facility. So that's the nutshell of it. And I know our officers are doing a lot for the planning, and they have a lot of involvement, and they're invested in this right now. And so we haven't brought anything officially back to the council with what our plans are, what improvements could be, less than the grand project that would cost $5 million. But we're trying to find kind of that sweet spot in the area that we could afford remodeling the existing building and having something that will function for the department for, you know, at least the short term, 5 years or so.
Now, you're going to be selling off the 12th Street property and be able to take those funds and roll it into this?
We sold that property, and we used the proceeds from that to buy these other parcels.
Okay, so you ended up with tangible for tangible, so to speak.
Yes.
Yes, we did.
And you still have got a little over $750,000 to be able to use as seed money, or at least to jumpstart the project?
That's the question. The city does have reserves. There is no extra money in a small city. I mean, whenever you spend money on something, you're neglecting something else. And so
right, but
I think
you said that the city had passed a $2 million bond for a police facility and the purchase of
So the city paid that revenue bond back with general funds, and so got rid of the debt service. After sitting on that property for a long time, those bonds were paid back. So we're even, no debt, and those were paid back.
Gotcha. So what are you going to do with the extra space in City Hall? Are there plans for that, or is that down the road far enough that you'll worry about when the time comes?
You know what I would love to do is to be able to consolidate engineering and planning and building in one spot. So right now we've got finance, administration, planning and building all kind of crammed into one side of City Hall. So if we are able to free up that space and the police don't need it for something, then we can consider, you know, focusing our planning and building on one side and be able maybe to create a conference room. But again, all these things cost money, and right now is you know, there's some serious budget implications with the coronavirus. Yeah. So our hope is to, you know, take a look at that. But again, we're not going to have a lot of money to put towards that for a while.
Before we get chewed out, let's take our break and then we'll be back. Okay. It's 8:30.
Hi, this is Brian Papstein. This afternoon, Humboldt County Health Officer Teresa Fankovic is having a press conference and will be announcing the formalization of our current practices, formerly referenced as shelter in place. What does this mean? How does it impact you? Find out as we will be talking with Humboldt County Sheriff Billy Hansel this afternoon. Stay tuned here in the 4 o'clock hour. You'll be able to hear that interview in its entirety, and we'll have it on our website later this afternoon.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It is 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Fortuna City Manager Merritt Perry. Talk shop presented by CDH Painting, REDEC, Humboldt Termite and Pest Control, and Murphy's Markets. Merritt, one of the challenges I would suspect that any city has, but particularly smaller cities, as you had indicated, that they don't have a public health officer, what a shocker, is that your hands are pretty much tied. You know, you get a chance to deal with the blowback, but you really don't get a chance to make any of the decisions. So as we start to see things and opportunities, you can't do it. Do the small cities, do cities at all, have any influence on the determinations that are being made at the county level or at the state level? Do you have to go like through LECA or some of the state associations to try to get your voice out there to get these guys understanding some of the problems that are going on?
You know, that's an interesting question, and I think that's an area that we would like to have some more input. Right now, I think the county's done a great job. They've set up their emergency operations center. They have calls with local law enforcement. They have calls with a city manager and elected officials group. But it's really, you know, they've been more of question sessions and maybe providing information. But really, we are really following the lead of the public health officer and the sheriff. And, you know, I think, you know, the sheriff and public health, they're always open to questions or comments or discussions or input. So they've certainly sought input. And I think they're willing to listen to that. But, you know, at the end of the day, they're calling the shots. And, you know, really the only subjectivity in the city is trying to interpret those orders and making sure that, you know, our interpretation is within the spirit of what the order contains in it. So, you know.
Well, it's a little curious, you know, when they start making some of these edicts, like the masks, okay, instead of being a strong recommendation, I mean, I don't see anything that says that the county has the authority to tell us what to wear, or that the county has the authority or the state has the authority to tell us, other than in a declared emergency, which we're not in, to stay away from this location, you know, like if there's a fire or something along those lines. Just
we are curious. In a declared emergency. So I think that is the distinction, is I think that we are in a declared emergency. The county's declared, the city, you know, and most of our local agencies have declared, the state's declared it, and the feds. And
right,
so
now that's for the funding purposes, right? More than anything else at this point?
Well, no, it's
does that also
the funding
give them the freedom
really,
to...
Yeah, when you're in a declared emergency, the funding really is just that's an aside that comes after that. But really, it's, you know, the fact is we are in an emergency situation, and so that's why they do have that authority.
So as you're looking at some of the different impacts of this, you know, in the past, if it was a flood and FEMA, you know, there was the declaration FEMA would have funds. Do you guys, I mean, at this point, there's been very limited funds available. Do you foresee that FEMA is going to have some funding available to help backfill in some of the economic impacts and the social impacts?
Right now, that's an interesting point, and I think that's a pretty big point of contention at the federal level. I think as a local agency, the biggest hit to a city is the loss of revenue in the form of sales tax, you know, maybe the loss of bookings that we're missing from some of our facilities. But the biggest one is going to be loss of sales tax, loss of transit occupancy tax, and possibly property tax as well. So right now, the feds, they're talking about it, but there's kind of been two differences of opinion. You know, I think one side has said, you know, we want to help the local agencies, and we think we should try to replace some of that lost revenue. And the other side is saying, you know, local agencies, you figure it out yourself. We're going to bail out private business, but not local agencies. And so, you know, I think that's something, you know, that we're going to see more of. The Stafford Act and the emergency declaration, I think, will cover the direct cost, you know, overtime, if you have to have police out there, if you're setting up facilities for, you know, folks to shelter in place that don't have somewhere to go, you know, or if you're having to modify your facilities to deal with the emergency or to operate emergency operations center. Those kind of direct costs will be paid for, but right now they're talking about it, but there's no proposals for replacing the loss of revenue. And that's what hits the smaller agencies really hard. A lot of money has come to the state and will come to the state, I think about $15.2 billion and cities over 500,000 in population can directly request their share of that money from the feds. But the smaller agencies under 500,000 don't really have a gateway to that money. And if they do see anything, it'll either be at the discretion of the governor, but not come directly to small cities. And right now there's not an allocation. So there's, you know, the California State Association of Counties and the League of California Cities, they're really advocating to see some of that aid that will be coming to California go directly in an allocation format to the cities to replace lost revenue. And then, you know, from a legislative effort, there's definitely those advocating for loss of revenue to come to the smaller cities as well.
Now, there was something that I saw in a couple of the different discussions I've been privy to talk about. There's almost like a dawning of a realization, and I think I've probably bored you with this one in the past, that I see that there's a caste system that's developing in America, but it's not an economic one. It's one based on rural versus urban. So as we start seeing some of these challenges that are going on, do you think that there's any recognition about the rural cities rather than the metropolitan and the larger communities to be able to start to make a difference on how we act, how we do, how we fund, things of that nature? It just seems like there's such a difference, but that at least the state level at this point, there doesn't seem to be any kind of formal recognition of it as far as funding.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's always going to be a challenge as a smaller rural agency, whether you're talking about Humboldt County or the cities, is trying to advocate and have your needs heard. I mean, we have smaller numbers of staff, and our dollar numbers aren't as large, but we're the front line of providing services for our citizens. And even though our bigger agencies, more staff, more lobbyists, I mean, they have a louder voice, and you know, they have more people to, you know, advocate for what those larger agencies need. So I think it's always a challenge as a rural agency trying to have your voice heard, and through participation in some of these, you know, larger groups and associations and leagues, that's one way that we're able to do it, is all come together and speak as one. And so I think the League of California Cities, all of our cities in Humboldt County are members, I think they do a really good job helping to pull together the needs and get those to the elected officials for rural agencies like ours.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:43.
The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission wants you to know that local economic development agencies, business resource organizations, financial institutions, and jurisdictions are working together to provide resources for the COVID-19 pandemic. For more information, go to northcoastsbdc.org or call the OES Business Hotline at 268-2527. 268-2527.
Good morning, KINS. News and Information Times, 8:47. We're back talking shop this morning with Mary Perry. Mary, in the last segment, we were talking a little bit about how small cities, small counties that don't have a lot of population are kind of on the outside looking in a lot of these situations. But when it comes to things like the shelter in place, there was a comment that was made last week that really got my attention. They said if we came back by May 1st, that there would be five times as many deaths as there are currently. Okay. Humboldt County's had zero deaths. Do you think that we're going to start to be able to normalize, or is anybody saying we're going to start to be able to normalize in the small rural areas, while those areas that have the higher density, higher concentration, the big apartment buildings, have to kind of work on a different timeline?
You know, I hope so, and I really don't have a good answer for you on that one right now, Brian. I mean, you know, common sense, if you have less cases and you have less active cases and you could be separated more by space, you'd think so. And I think that's everybody's hope in Humboldt County, but I don't think there's any guarantees of that. And, you know, at this point, I'm not going to conflict or contradict what we hear our health officials telling us. So, you know, I'm going to have
sure
to believe what they're saying at this point, but I tend to be more of an optimist and think we can move things more quickly. So this is one of those circumstances where I think that has to be tempered with, you know, the judgment from the health professionals. But I think everybody you know, including those making the rules under this order, want to see things get back to normal. But, you know, as a government agency, I think you have to be protective of public health. And that's a really tough place to be. And that's a really hard decision to make, is to not, you know, there's so much pressure to bring things back to normal and to have businesses open, you know, and you're expected to predict the future, which you can't do. And I think they're doing the best that they can with the information they have and the models they're running. But I'll tell you, you know, if you're cavalier and you make a decision and it costs lives, you know, you're not going to be forgiven for that, you know. But if you're overly protective, I think there's less risk in decisions in that direction. So, you know, take that for what it's worth. It's a difficult place to predict the future, given, you know, varying inputs of how you might behave. So,
right.
I'm glad that's not my decision.
But you're not hearing that there's a groundswell among rural, the RCRC or the small cities in California, to say, hey, you know, let us lead the way. That's not happening at this point.
I'm not seeing it. I don't know if I'd be the best person. I mean, I'm on, you know, one of the communication servers from the Rural Cities Task Force for the League of California Cities. But there's other elected officials in Humboldt County that are tied in more with the rural counties, like Rex Bowen, I know, is, I think, a member
right.
of that one. But,
right.
you know, I'm not seeing that as an obvious effort right now to have the rural counties open. I mean, I've heard talk of it, but I haven't really seen any formally come across my desk to advocate directly for that.
Well, maybe tomorrow we'll get some good news on that one.
Maybe we will. I mean,
I think
I think as this goes on, people are going to, you know, have more and more of a desire to get things back to normal.
Yes.
You know, and there's
going to
be a lot of pressure.
You see that. Yeah, you see that throughout the country. I'm sure it'll be here, too. Thanks for coming by this morning, Merritt.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you, Brian.
See you tomorrow.